Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtham Manamapi Shakti Putra Matra Surupam Rupam Tasyagrajamurupuring Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhava Sham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Shantakaram Bhujagasayanam Padmanabham Suresham Vishvadharam Gagana Sadrisham Meghavarnam Shubhangam Lakshmi Kantam Kamalanayanam Yogi Bhyadhyanagam Yang Vande Vishnum Bhavabhayaharam Sarvalokaikanatham Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuing discussion of Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. A brief examination of some of the qualities by which Vishnu is known as Vishnu, by which he is known as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why he should be worshipped. When we say brief, well, there are, in the Vishnu Sahasranama, there are 920 names. So that's brief. Each name has many meanings. Madhvacharya proposed to give 100 meanings for each name. To us it may seem like a lot, because generally we only have one name. We may have other names, nicknames, titles. In Vedic culture, someone who's very important, or more, they'll have more names or more titles, just like Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parivrajaka Acharya, Ashtotarasata Sri, etc. These are some examples of various appellations that are given to people who are worthy of them. But in the modern age, you just have a name and a number. And a thumbprint, and an eye, a retina thing. When you go through the airport, they look at that. Scanned, is it? Yeah. I am not a number. Interesting, but Vishnu has unlimited qualities, therefore unlimited names. And actually, this is only, there are many more names, just like, Vallabhacharya also extracted all names of Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam. And we can, and devotees, you can make up names as you go along, if you're transcendentally disposed. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prayed to Krishna as Bhaktivinoda Ashraya. Comes in the song Yashomati Nandan. This song, this name had not been there before. Now it's there. So there are unlimited names. And each name has various meanings. So name 98, Siddhaha, or more usually Siddha. So you've all heard this term before, presumably, if you read Srila Prabhupada's books. This term, siddhi, means a particular kind of attainment. It's often translated as perfection. Siddha is one who possesses siddhi. The first explanation or interpretation given here from Parashara Bhatta of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya is not the usual understanding of the word siddha. But because Parashara Bhatta, he's concerned to keep that each name or group of names will come in some sequence. So there's some correlation between each name, not that it appears to be an arbitrary collection of names. So he states, Parashara Bhatta states that Siddha, he describes this, Swarupenaiva Bhaktanam Siddhatvat Siddha Uchate. He is in the hands of, or that means available to, his devotees in his true form, in his Swarup. He's available in his Swarup, in his actual form. So this is another important point. Actually, it's all Srimad Bhagavatam philosophy, with all different points that are discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam come out here. That Krishna is in relationship with everyone. Yayata mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajami aham. Even those who deny Krishna or don't remember Kravam Jagada Vyakta Murtina, Krishna pervades the whole universe. That name will come up soon. Vishva Yoni. This whole universe is within him, contained within him. So we cannot avoid Krishna. But those who attempt to do so, they find or they relate with Krishna in a different way. As Krishna says, Mrityu sarva harashchaham, to themselves, but they do not wish to die, they are forced to die. So for them, that there is a power controlling them, which they always deny, that is manifest in the form of death. So that's also one form of Krishna. So they meet Krishna in that form. For those who consider themselves the supreme, or merge with the divine oneness, they meet Krishna. Not exactly, because they're avoiding Krishna, but they merge into the impersonal Brahman, which is also Krishna, but not Swarup. Here the word is given Swarup. So Krishna is available to his devotees only as he is, as he really is, as he wishes to interact with us. Only available to only the devotees attain him. So Siddha, that also suggests that one of the facets of Krishna, the usual understanding of the term Siddha, is perfect in all respects. So one of the features of that is Nahang Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrita Murho Yang Nabijanati Loko Mama Jamamvyam. That Krishna, he is not manifest to those who are fools and rascals, who do not want to interact with him, who have decided to boycott him. So he boycotts them also. And for them, he's just not available. They say there is no God, and in one sense, there isn't, because he's not manifest. But again, they meet him in less desirable forms. But So the devotee, he is available. And just shortly we'll have the name Pundarikaksha. The beautiful lotus-eyed one. So he's available like that to his devotees. And for the non-devotees, Ravindaksha. Same meaning. Pundarikaksha, lotus-eyed. Aravindaksha. The same meaning. So yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas twayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya aruhya kritshrena parang padang tatang patantyadho nadrita yushvadangraha. For those who yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas, who think that they are siddha, who think that they themselves are perfect in all respects, who think themselves fully liberated. There are such persons who think themselves fully liberated, but their intelligence is impure. And although by great difficult endeavor they attain to the state beyond the material nature, they fall down again into it because of their willing neglect of Krishna's lotus feet. So another symptom of Krishna's siddhatvam, or his eternal perfection, that he is beyond the scope of understanding of those who do not accept his process. He lays down the law. Different people have different theories about what is perfection or what is the purpose of life, but they can theorize as much as they like. But Krishna is the one who sets the rules. So to get in line with Krishna is the perfection of life. And to not do that, one may be in the estimation of oneself and others, a great, very cruel term that is used in Vedic culture. Siddha means one who has attained that which he desires to, or Mahapurush, refers to a human being attained the perfection of entering the pastimes of Krishna in this life. That's in Gaudiya terminology. So, that or one is considered Siddha, Siddha Yogi. If he can act in ways, or you just naturally, they become famous, they're not famous, they get forgotten in course of time. Tailanga Swami, he would walk the streets of Varanasi naked. So the British would catch him and stick him in jail, and then they'd find him walking around the streets again naked, because you can't lock up a yogi. So they gave up after some time. But Krishna, his siddhatvam, his state of being perfect, it's not something attained after the performance of some austerities or some yoga practice. He's nitya siddha. This term we've also heard. Nitya siddha means a devotee who is never in contact with material nature. So Krishna is also nitya siddha, not that the devotees only, he's his associates, but he's the leader of all the nitya siddhas. There's no question that this point will come up a little later. There's no question of him ever being in contact with material energy. As Srila Prabhupada often stressed, Krishna didn't, so unlike various people who claim themselves to be God, I have become God. Just like there was someone a few years ago who was working in the Life Insurance Corporation office of India, and around the age of 40 himself as Kalki Avatar, and got quite some followers, but then he had some Someone complained he was messing around with some of his female followers, and then he had to leave Tamil Nadu and go to Andhra Pradesh. And he's a one of those avatars who was fairly big, but didn't really make it to the big time, and you don't hear much about him now. He's a retired avatar. There are a few of them here and there, retired avatars. He had a realization he was God, but it wasn't that impressive. Some of them are quite impressive. I mean, many people are impressed. There was the Satya Sai Baba. He managed, despite all exposés, he was able to keep his God act going. Even he was in a wheelchair at the end of life, and still people believed he's God. But nevertheless, the fact remains that he's not God. Krishna is never in a wheelchair. There's no such case. So the point that Srila Prabhupada made, that Krishna is always God. He did not have to undergo any process to realize that he is God. When he was a child, just a few weeks old, without any possibility of him performing any yoga practice or discussing any Vedanta philosophy with anyone, he slew the Rakshasi, Putana, who was impossible to destroy due to her great yogic powers. She was a great yogini. She was Siddha. She was Siddha, yeah. And translation of that is Siddha, if you didn't know. See, I speak a little Croatian also. Siddhi, I picked it up along the way. So, though she, the demons, they often have many great powers also, which they acquire by performing great austerity. There's a light on in that bathroom, which has been on for the last half an hour or so. I was thinking maybe someone was in there, but now I doubt it. So better turn the light off. So Krishna playfully killed her. For Krishna, he's killing even that. Krishna is so perfect, he doesn't have to exert himself to kill others. What for someone else would be an impossible task, Krishna not in that position. Krishna is not constrained by any laws of material nature. All the laws of material nature and of spiritual nature all work simply to orchestrate his pleasure. Everything is completely under his control in all respects. So another point about this is that he knows everything past, present and future. So that's another aspect of being Siddha. Another understanding of this word, there's a term commonly used, prasiddha, which means exceptionally siddha. That this means well-known or famous. So siddha also means well-known. That is one of the features by which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhagavan, Yashaha. He is all famous. So Krishna is very well known. Better known than you or I can ever be. So in this sense he is Siddha also. Name 99 is Siddhi. Siddha means possessed of all Siddhis, all perfections, opulences, or extraordinary powers. But he is also Siddhi. The manifest, whenever there is anything extraordinary, we should know that is a manifestation of Krishna. Yadyat vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjitam eva va tat tat eva vagacchatam mamate jongsha sambhavam. At the end of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna describes some of his vibhutis. Vibhuti means some manifestation of something which is considered extraordinary. Not from Krishna's point of view, but from our point of view, the Himalayas, they're something astonishing. They're so big. Mount Meru, well, we haven't seen. That's the lion is in the Vibhuti Yoga chapter. There are so many given. Prahlada, he's given. Among the Daityas, he is Prahlada. The yogis, they attempt to achieve. And these are all automatically manifested in Krishna. They are anima, the ability to become smaller than the smallest. So we can understand this Tailanga Swami. He could get out, if there's even a slight crack, or even less, he can get out by becoming very smaller than the smallest. Laghima, one becomes very light, by which one can fly on a sunbeam up to the sun planet. You can sunbeam, and the yogi can enter that and go all the way up. Srila Prabhupada also explained that certain yogis, they go down in the water, in the Ganga, maybe at Badrinath or Haridwar, and they come up at the Ganga Sagar. They just go down, and the next second they come up somewhere else. And in this, they go down in the water in one place and come up, and in this way they can bathe in four places daily. They can bathe in the north, south, east, west. Haridwar, Puri, Rameshwaram, Dwaraka. Prabhupada said, I have personally seen. So presumably Prabhupada himself did that. Otherwise, how could he personally see it? So that's another siddhi. I'm not sure which one that comes under. So laghima, prapti. One can get anything. You just, whatever you want, you can get. Srila Prabhupada also gave an example of this, that when one yogi came to his father's house once and asked, what would you like to eat? So they said, we'd like some, Srila Prabhupada's father said, I'd like some pomegranate from Kabul. So he said, you go in the next room, and they're just fresh, taken from, plucked from the tree was some Kabuli pomegranate. So the yogi just immediately, you want? Okay, take it. So that's prapti siddhi. And achieve a position of superiority. Vashidva, one can bring one's be under one's control, self-control. And kama vasayata, all one's desires are controlled. So these are the eight siddhis, and there are upasiddhis or all secondary siddhis also. So these are all manifestations of Krishna. When we see someone do something spectacular, or extraordinary, we should know this is all a manifestation of Krishna. That's all. So siddhi means accomplishment, success. Karma siddhi means success in work. What is that? Kangshanta karmanang siddhim. Yajanteha devataha kshipram hi manushe loke. Siddhya bhavati karmaja. Krishna speaks about karma siddhi, or achieving perfection of work. How people worship demigods for doing so. And quickly in this world, one can achieve success by work. You have to, by doing some work, you can achieve success. But that success is only possible by Krishna. So, karma siddhi, jnana siddhi, we don't usually hear of yoga siddhi. So the siddha yogi is one who's achieved yoga siddhi. So he's able to do all these fancy tricks, which ordinary people become impressed by. But a devotee sees, a real yogi is not much interested in these tricks. We hear in the New Testament of Jesus walking on the water. It's a standard thing that yogis do. And maybe in Palestine at that time it was quite unimaginable. But yogis, they often do that. There's that one of the, in South India that's described that. What was that? To go to Sri Rangam, was it? That time in the rainy season and the boatman refused to go. So the devotee, he just walked over the river. He was asking the boatman to go. The boatman wouldn't go, so he just walked. That's all. It means he could have walked, but he was asking for the boat. So there are many such instances. There's that Shankaracharya, he also, when he was walking over, crossed over the water like that, and one of his disciples said, "How can we follow?" He said, "Just come." And then the disciple came. Wherever he put his foot, the lotus came up, and he stepped on the lotus petals and walked over. Then he became known as Padmapada. So, you throw or you shoot an arrow with a mantra and then it makes huge fire everywhere, and then someone else brings a water weapon and that neutralizes that, and like this. So these are various siddhis. But devotees are not much interested in this. The real siddhi is prem prayojana. The complete perfection of life is to attain to the stage of pure love of Krishna. Otherwise, things like going to heavenly planets, devotees don't see anything in that. But who endows love of Krishna, that is the real accomplishment that everyone should desire for. Everyone should desire. So siddhi suggests that he is the highest perfection. He is perfect in all respects. There is no question of imperfection in Krishna. Anyone who ascribes imperfection to him does so because of his own imperfection, that they see imperfection where there is none. He is full of unlimited extraordinary power, which to him is not extraordinary. For him it's quite normal. But for us it seems extraordinary. So that there is no fault in Krishna. This point should be understood. There's no question of any fault in Krishna. Krishna is inherently, axiomatically perfect in all respects. He is perfect. He is the standard. So, another name. Name 100. Sarvadi. So that's a very easy one to understand. He is the origin or cause of all things. Anadir adir govinda sarvakarana karanam. Before there was anything manifested, there was Krishna. Before, now we're fighting. This is Croatia. This is Serbia, and then they change the border and everything. But none of this existed. And there will be a time when it will not exist. But Krishna will always exist. That he is Sarvadi, the origin of everything, or that he existed before everything, also implies that he will continue to exist even when everything in this world ceases to exist. So just imagine how great he is. He appears in this world as if he is the son of Yashoda. Appears like that. But what is his actual position, we can only begin to think about. We can hardly imagine. It's like in biblical mythology, they have the idea that the world was created 6,000 or something years ago. And then how come there are dinosaur bones? God put them there to test our faith. That's the explanation. But in Vedic understanding, bhutva, bhutva, pralayate, the whole universe comes into being and it is just destroyed again and again and again. It's created and destroyed.
Hare Krishna.
And always existing before this creation. Before
he who is known,
what is before?
By the letter A.
Before, after. So this whole material existence, it's like a kaleidoscope in which everything is changing all the time. Gachatiti jagat. That which is always changing is called the world. So always changing, changing, changing. But he who stays the same, that is Krishna. Sometimes the question comes up, atheists, they think they got us checkmated with this question. Well, if God created everything, who created God? And they think, now we got you. No. The very meaning of the term God is Sarvadi, before whom there was no one. Who is the ultimate source of everything? That is the meaning of God. You may not believe, but if you're going to use the word God at all, you have to accept this definition. Who is the source of everything? You may say, well, how can that be? Well, how can it be that there's an ultimate... It's actually, even from a mundane logical point of view, egress, which is impossible. Because if you say who it, I don't know how you say infinite regress in Croatian. If you don't know, you can't translate it. Sorry. You should have a laptop there with a dictionary. So, you know what I mean by an infinite regress. Well, it's just like you say, well, who created God? And you say, well, so-and-so created God. Well, who created that? Well, someone else created that. And it goes on infinitely. You go backward. Regress means to go backwards. So an infinite regress. But it's more logical to have an ultimate source, even though you can't understand it, than to have an infinite regress. So who created God? For such people we have... Srila Prabhupada recommended a boot in the face. Here is the answer to your question. Just put your head down a little bit, just to make it convenient for me. And here is a boot. For you, there's no need to discuss anything. This might improve your way of thinking. Might it adjust a few of the cells in your brain there. Needs a little adjustment. Of course, although Srila Prabhupada said this, he never actually did it. So it seems to be a metaphorical boot in the face. But that is the best answer for such people. When people brought up absurd propositions, that's what Srila Prabhupada often said, kick them in the face with a boot. When it means you can't discuss, people, they're saying things which they think are very intelligent to them. The example of the car and the driver. analogous to the body and the soul. So I started giving this analogy, and he interrupted and said, well, you're supposed to be holy people. I don't see why you should drive cars at all. So, you know, what's the use? We've all had experiences like this. Another time I was on a train journey from Howrah to Delhi, or somewhere thereabout. Long train journey, day-long journey. And there are a group of Muslims from Bangladesh who are on their way to Ajmer to see some dargah, some Muslim Sufi shrine. So there's time, and we were discussing. So we discussed on and on and on, and they were wiggling this way and that way, and eventually, logically, I brought them to the point that God must be a person. So after, you know, it's like 1.5 hours discussion, and they had no way to avoid it logically. And at the end of all that, they said, well, we don't believe it. Then why all this, you know, why all this discussion? Why discuss if you just don't believe it? What was the point of all that discussion? So, boots. Essential part of a devotee's preaching arsenal. Name 101. Achyuta. This is an important name in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is several times addressed by Arjuna as Achyuta. Not Achyuta. If you say Achyuta, then it becomes Chyuta, more Chyuta than a regular Chyuta. Achyuta means not Chyuta, and Achyuta becomes Achyuta, means not Chyuta. Achyuta, yeah. So it's a common name. It comes up many times in Shastra, but one who can fall, one who can slip from his position. But Krishna, he never falls. He never comes down. And also to understand Krishna's pastimes, that even though Krishna in many ways appears to be like
surrendered to some Hindu god, teach us the mood of the Panchatattva.
Even though he may appear to lament, for instance, when Shalva was fighting with Krishna, and he brought before Krishna an illusory form of the head of Vasudeva, the father of Krishna, and Krishna for a short time lamented as if he thought that actually Shalva had killed his father. So he would appear dancing like a little child. He is fully absorbed in being a little child, but at the same time, Srila Vishnu Thakur explains, simultaneously, he never forgets that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we find in his Vrindavan pastimes especially, he combines being the Supreme Personality of Godhead with being the Brajabharanagara, the best of the playboys of Vrindavan, or the Rajajana Ranjana, the pleasure of all the people of Vrindavan. So he plays both roles simultaneously. As required, he will act as Siddha, as having all powers. And the residents of Vrindavan they expect that of him. Just like the forest fire is there. And they appeal to Krishna. Krishna, please save us. They know that Krishna can save them. So Krishna saves them. So he exhibits his extraordinary powers as required, but he never stops being Vrajajana Ranjana, the darling of the, or the delight of the people of Vrindavan. So Krishna, although in many ways he appears like an ordinary person, it is essential to know that even though he exhibits what might appear to be material characteristics such as hunger, thirst, lamentation, anger, and so on, Krishna is never in any circumstances even slightly compromised from his transcendental position as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no question of him being anything less than perfect. He is never under Maya, even though he steals, lies, cheats, but he's never materially influenced. Also, that he is achyuta, his judgment is never less than perfect. He was on the battlefield with Arjuna without any prompting. He hadn't done any homework the night before. But he was able to speak Bhagavad Gita perfectly. Hadn't been revising his shlokas. Gave the perfect exposition of spiritual knowledge. He's always ready at any time to do that. His knowledge is always perfect. His judgment never fails. So one who follows his teachings by his grace also becomes achyuta. A jiva by nature is subject to falling. But Krishna says, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Even though the jiva is subject to be overcome by material nature, but Krishna protects such a devotee. Krishna is intrinsically achyuta. And he lifts his devotee up to that platform and maintains his devotee on that platform. So one meaning of the name achyuta is one who never slips. And another meaning is one who does not let his devotees fall also. He doesn't let his devotees fall. Even though his devotees may appear to be fallen, but the devotee is never fallen. Navai jano jatu katanchana vrajain makunda sevanya vadanga sangsritan. A devotee, even though he may appear to be fallen, he is not fallen because Krishna lifts him up. From demigods. Sometimes it's misunderstood that the demigods and Krishna, they're all on the same level. They're all different gods and they're all gods. But even though Krishna may appear to be influenced by material qualities, it should be understood that he is not. He is always the controller of Maya, whereas various demigods like Brahma and Indra, they're actually subject to material nature. So what's the difference? The Indra, becomes angry and wants to inundate Vrindavan, or Indra becomes attracted to the wife of a rishi, or Brahma becomes attracted to his own daughter. So what's the difference between them and Krishna, who becomes attracted to so many young women? What's the difference? They're all just under the influence of Maya, and then you have to become a Shakta and say that Durga is supreme because everyone's influenced by her. But no, Krishna's attraction is not mundane. Krishna is at the same time that he is attracted to the beautiful girls of Vrindavan, but that attraction is not exactly a sexual attraction. It is, Krishna is attracted to their pure devotion. So Indra and Brahma, these are posts which can be attained, but Krishna is not a post that can be attained. Every one of us have been in the post of Brahma previously, so we understand. But there's no question of us ever, and we could be, take the post of Brahma also. But there is no question of us ever becoming Krishna. Only Krishna is Krishna. Krishna is not a post to be attained. Krishna is always Krishna. There can never be any substitute Krishna. Nor is there any need for that, because Krishna is never going to retire from being Krishna. And nor is he ever going to be tired of being Krishna. So he never falls from his situation. He's not influenced by mundane lust. This is an essential point to understand. That the apparent manifestations of worldly deficiencies in Krishna, that's a misunderstanding. It's simply a misunderstanding to see it as such. That's why we have to see all these different qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understand who he is. Then we can understand there's no question of him being influenced by mundane lust. When he's the origin of everything, he existed before everything, even Brahma, Indra, Chandra, they all offer obeisance to him. All energies are under his control. Parasya shakti vividhaiva shuryate swabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. Then we can understand there's no question of Krishna being at any moment coming under material nature, which is, material nature is just one of Krishna's sub-potencies. It's not even one of his major potencies. There's no question of him coming under the control of it. Another meaning is that he never abandons his devotees. Even though Arjuna was apparently in Maya, Krishna did not abandon him. Even though Ajamil went away from Krishna for so long, Krishna never abandoned him. Gajendra was just stupid elephant, but Krishna came and saved him. So remembering this, devotees, they address Krishna as Achyuta, knowing that if we perform any little sincere service to Krishna, Krishna will never forget us. But on the other hand, if we think, well, I've done so much service, and then, okay, I'll just do whatever I like, and it doesn't matter, because Krishna will look after me. That is not sincere. That we can't cheat Krishna either. So we shouldn't take Krishna's mercy for granted. As soon as we do, we lose it. So Krishna doesn't let his devotees slip. He'll never abandon his devotees. Now, another meaning of chuta is, these are all slight nuances of the same term, a modification. So Krishna is changeless, that's another meaning of the name of Vishnu. So, he who is always eternally auspicious and changeless, his nature never changes, his essential nature never changes. There's no modification, he doesn't ever become subject to the conditions of material existence, which are birth, growth, maintenance for some time, giving out byproducts such as children, dwindling and death. Krishna is never subject to such modifications. The ultimate, we just had the name Siddhi. So the ultimate siddhi is not to produce, to bring some pomegranate or to float in the air. What are they, levitating? Yes. But the ultimate siddhi from the yogic point of view is to conquer death. So Krishna is, anyway, Krishna is always beyond death. There's no question of Krishna ever dying. It's a silly idea. It's a silly idea. So in these various ways, Krishna is achyuta, not achyuta. It's a lifelong habit now, yeah. Achyuta. You don't have the sound in your language? You don't have it. Well, it's a good thing to learn, because just like I hear every morning, Vishnu Bhakti Prade. Prade, Prade. There are so many things. I'll go crazy if I try and correct your pronunciation. It's like everyone says it very strongly. Prade, Vishnu Bhakti Prade. Prade. Should be. Okay, the next name. Where are we going here? Whoops. Yeah, name 102. Vrishakapi. So this can be understood in various ways. Vrisha can mean a man, especially a very powerful man, like a bull, or Vrisha can mean dharma, and kapi is generally understood to mean a monkey, but also means a boar. So the meaning given here of Vrishakapi by Parashara Bhatta is he who lifted the earth from the waters of adharma in the form of Varaha. The earth fell down, and Kapi refers to a boar, particularly the Varaha avatar, not to any boar. Kapi is a common word for monkey. It's a standard word for monkey. But in this particular instance, it means the Varaha avatar, because pa means to protect and ka means water. So who protected from the water? So this particularly refers to the Varaha avatar, where he protected the water, the earth from the water. So a dharma boar, the boar who uplifted the earth as an act of dharma. That is the meaning of the name Vrishakapi. Yeah. Another meaning given is that he is the personality of dharma who he fulfills the devotee's desires and makes the demons fearful, which fits with Nrsimhadev. Yeah, I was going to quote from Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashayata Dushkritam. He fulfills the devotee, that light in the bathroom's been left on. Again, common thing. Go in the bathroom, turn on the light, and leave it on. Let someone else pay the bill. So Krishna appears in this world. He uplifts the devotees who become very, after being tortured by the demons, they become not only relieved from the distress of being tortured by the demons, but superlatively happy by Krishna's appearance. So Krishna can be even better appreciated, that he can, even when we're in great distress. And we all have experience of that, that if we're in difficulty, then our bhakti increases. So that's very good, to be in distress. That's why Kunti prayed, which no materialist can understand her prayer. Give me more distress. All this time we've been praying to you to relieve us from distress. We had one distress after another. Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanada Satsabha Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishna Mridhem Ridhaneka Maharatashtrata Dronashtrata Chasma Hare Birakshita. Hari, she prays to him as Hari, she prays to Krishna as He who removes the troubles of the devotees. So she spoke of some of the major problems that Krishna had helped them with. That Bhima was given poison to drink. He survived. They were supposed to be burned to death. Krishna, they survived means Krishna protected them. Krishna fully protected them. Hare Abhirakshitaha. Krishna fully protected them from the poison, from the great fire, from the Rakshasas who wanted to eat them. Twice there was Kudimba, the Rakshasa, wanted to eat the Pandavas. Bhima killed him. Then there was another one, this Bhaka. He wanted to, Bhima was supposed to be sent as food to him, but instead Bhima killed him. Then the insulting and humiliating experience in the gambling match, having to live in the forest with all the attendant difficulties, including so many difficulties they went through in the forest. Durvasa was sent to, with the aim of Durvasa having, that he would eventually curse them. All, so many difficulties they went through. Then the battle of Kurukshetra. So Krishna saved them. And then, even after the battle was over, then their whole dynasty was to be destroyed by Ashvatthama's Brahmastra. But again Krishna saved them. So again and again, the devotee, the Pandavas and Kunti were turning to Krishna for protection in all difficulties. And then when all difficulties were over, everything was settled, then Kunti prayed, Vipada santuta shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanang yat sad apuna bhava darshana. That we, all this life, all our life we've been praying to you to free us from difficulty. Now we have no difficulty. Please give us some difficulty. Give us more and more danger. Because if there is danger, we will see you. You'll be here. You'll be coming to look after us. But if there's no danger, then we won't see you. But by seeing you, we'll no longer see birth and death. So this was her prayer. That she, Krishna fulfills the devotee's desire. But what is the desire? The devotee simply desires to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna. So Krishna fulfills that by giving himself to his devotee. And he makes the demons fearful. So that's another meaning. Name 103. Ame Atma. Atma means the self. It means the body, the mind, the personality, the intelligence, the very self. So, Ame-atma means whose atma, whose personality cannot be comprehended, literally cannot be measured. Miyate anaya iti maya. One definition of maya is one who thinks that they can measure. Scientists, they want to measure everything. But if you think we can measure Krishna, how big is Krishna? One who thinks they can measure him is in maya. He's immeasurable. His person, just like, well, there are several examples. Vamandev looked very small. So, Bali Maharaj thought, he's only asking for 3 steps of land by his own measurement. That's not very much. But by his own measurement, he didn't know what the measurement of Vishnu was. He thought he was just a little boy. And with 2 steps, he covered the whole universe. Bali Maharaj said, you're not taking enough. And he said, no, I shouldn't. You see, we should be satisfied with whatever we need. We shouldn't be greedy. And Bali said, come on, you're just an inexperienced young boy. Now, take my advice. You should take more. You shouldn't have to come back to me again. He said, no, I just take 3 steps. And so, all right. Then he took 2 steps. And then Vaman said to him, see, you promised to give me 3 steps of land, and you can't even do that. And you're telling me I wasn't taking enough. Now, with 2 steps, I covered everything you had. And now what are you going to do? Also, the Matsya Avatar, just this Kritanjali, this Satyavrata Muni, in the river bathing, he's offering the water, the standard system, found there's little fish. The fish said, look after me. There are so many big fish in this water. Oh, it's a talking fish. Okay. All right. Took him home, put him in a goldfish bowl or whatever. And then he grew too big and said, this is too small for me. Oh, you're growing very quickly. Okay, well. And put you in a pond and you throw him in the pond and come back the next morning. It's too small. Oh, and in a big lake. And then that's too small. And put him in the ocean and it becomes, who is this? This must be Vishnu. Vishnu is immeasurable. So, to think that we can measure Krishna, especially Ame-atma, his nature, to think we can comprehend everything about Krishna. If we go through, I mean, from our perspective, being tiny little beings with short lives, to go through 1,000 names of Vishnu seems to be a very great endeavor. But we can, and we may think then we'll understand more about Krishna. Well, that's true. We should do. We should hope to understand more about Krishna. But at the same time, one essential point in understanding Krishna is that we can't understand him anyway. Or to a limited extent we can understand him. Because we have limited intelligence. To think that we shall come to a point, we shall attain such a siddhi that we shall understand everything about Krishna. To think like that is foolishness. One who understands that we cannot know everything about Krishna, that is a proper understanding. But at the same time, we should try to understand him as much as we can. And again, we cannot understand him simply by our own brain power, but by his mercy on us, we can understand his glories to some extent. Otherwise, how much can we understand about his nature? He's extremely grave. That will come up soon. He's extremely grave, at the same time extremely playful. In some ways he's very predictable because he, on cue, or in order, or systematically, that's the word. He creates, maintains, and destroys different universes, but at the same time he's very unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen next with Krishna around. So Krishna, his nature cannot be comprehended, which suggests a very deep personality, very complex personality. But generally when we see someone a complex personality, that it means a difficult person. But Krishna, in another sense, he's also very simple, because he's very pliable to his, to the love of his devotees. He's very, very responsive to that. So Krishna, his nature and personality are incomprehensible. Even if we say, oh, this deity is 1 meter high. But that's also that you, we may say like that, that's a conventional understanding. But deities, it happens sometimes, they grow. That, especially if you feed them better, they, sometimes they get, they, all their clothes won't fit them. They have to make new clothes. So, Krishna is immeasurable. Hare Krishna! That's all for now. That's all I, we shall discuss more tomorrow. As Srila Prabhupada used to sometimes say at the end of his classes. Unless there's any question on this. Any question? No. Yeah, but it should be on this subject.
Yeah, you may, you mentioned it's technical more or less.
Yeah, there's a lot of this is very technical in one sense.
So you mentioned the book of Vallabhacharya in which he extracted the names of the word from the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Another, actually you mentioned you have it somewhere. So what is your opinion about that book? Should you read that book? Or?
Well, I only have it in Sanskritam, in Nagari script. I can't remember. You maybe have it translated already, huh? But I don't know that it, I don't think it's been translated so far. Would there's so many books to be translated. I can't remember the name. I came across it in someone's house in Dubai once. Then I made a photocopy. So, I have some book that you don't have. You're eager to have it. There's so many nice things in different sampradayas. We don't even have any idea of the great wealth we have in our own sampradaya. What to speak of other sampradayas? What to speak of the folk culture? There's so many things. Immense literature, Srila Prabhupada sometimes used to say. There is immense literature. All right, Hare Krishna. All right, there's another question, just as we're ready to finish. All right. All right, you can ask now.
You translate in. Rekao si da duhovna duša pada pod utjecaj iluzije.
Sorry? Yeah, the jiva is subject to fall under the influence of illusion. That's a fact, yeah.
Da li to znači da jiva može biti materijalna? Ili samo misli da pada pod utjecaj iluzije?
No, the jiva is not material, but acts or appears to be as if material. He forgets his own nature. and accepts the asat, achit, nirananda position, the position of being as if not eternal, not properly conscious, and not blissful. Not actually in this situation, but appears to be, as if yaya samohito jiva, that verse is there. But maya is that by which he completely bewilders the jiva, so he forgets his own nature.